All right, we'll bring the meeting to order, the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee, and start out with a roll call.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Considine.
Here.
Representative Dean.
Here.
Representative Hertaus. Representative Hillstrom. Representative Howe.
Here.
Representative Lohmer.
Here.
Representative Lucero.
Here.
Representative Neuberger.
Great to serve.
Representative O'Neill. Representative Quam. Representative Rosenthal.
Here.
Representative Schoen. Representative Ward. Representative Winkler. And Representative Zerwas.
All right. Looks like we have a quorum. Will someone move the minutes of March 26th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Which one? Oh, Representative Rosenthal moves the minutes of March 26th, seconded by Representative Zerwas. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We have four bills up, and all of them are going to be held over. And Representative Albright has got the first bill. And Representative Hillstrom, I just wanted to give your committee a kind of a little briefing here. I'm going to make a presentation to my committee members today on the budget and on the GOP side. And then we'll get it to you, the budget policy and finance. And we're looking at next, Tuesday and Wednesday, something like that, for the couple of days. And I may take your suggestion. Maybe we'll bring it up with the CA, and we'll talk about it, about maybe doing finance one day and policy another, or we'll figure it out. And then we'll give you plenty of time to look at the bill and have your amendments ready, even though you probably won't have any amendments because it's a perfect bill. But so at any rate, that's what kind of what the plan is. And GOP members, when we're done today, then we'll huddle together or have a group meeting. And okay, Representative Albright, I'll move your bill to be held over, and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 743 deals with a situation that is a bit unique to Scott County, of which I am a resident, and I have a testifier that is going to elaborate on some opening comments that I will make to kind of give you a lay of the land in terms of what the bill is all about. Scott County provides correction services that are not unlike other participating counties, but with less state money. The overall shortage is visible in lower staffing and larger caseloads, as Mr. Cleveland, Scott County's Community Corrections Director, will explain. For example, he said that under 1973 Community Corrections Act, Minnesota counties can opt to deliver correctional services for all offenders rather than relying on the State Department of Corrections to do that for them. There's also a hybrid option, which Scott County has participated in since 2006. What that has done is left supervision of adult felony and gross misdemeanor offenders to the state. And when Scott County made the transition to supervising everyone, some state money to support that never materialized. The discrepancy came to light when Sherburne County, weighing possible participation in the program, started researching funding allocations. By comparing Scott County to similar CCA counties, county officials calculated that we have been missing out on about $80,000 to $150,000 annually. And to put that in perspective in terms of services provided, but we have a staff that has not been provided compensation to the county in terms of services that have been rendered. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, who will get down in the weeds in terms of what the language and for the remuneration that we're seeking is. Thank you.
Good morning, sir. If you want to give your name and title, organization, and begin.
Good morning. My name is Tim Cleveland, and I'm the director of Scott County Community Corrections. And Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of Scott County this morning. As you know, Sherburne County has a bill in the legislature this year to become a Community Corrections Act county. The only other county that went into the Community Corrections Act in the last 21 years is Scott County, which they did in 2006. Prior to that, Stearns County entered the Community Corrections Act in 1994. In the 12 years between the time that Stearns County and Scott County entered the Community Corrections Act, there were additional funding streams that the legislature appropriated to try to help reduce the caseloads, probation caseloads, and workloads across the state. These dollars were in the form of adult felony caseload reduction and caseload workload reduction dollars. At the time these dollars were appropriated, Scott County was a split county. They had a Department of Corrections office, and we had a court services office. And so the felony caseload was handled by the Department of Corrections, the adult felonies and the misdemeanor adults, and the juvenile cases were supervised by court services. When these dollars were appropriated, the felony caseload reduction dollars went to the Department of Corrections, and the caseload workload dollars went to the Department of Corrections, and they determined a split between court services and the Department of Corrections. We do not feel that Scott County received their fair share of these dollars when they entered into the Community Corrections Act in 2006. This became more apparent when Sherburne County researched this issue and put together the CCA funding comparison between all the Community Corrections Act counties, which you have before you. We feel that the $85,000 appropriation request in this bill would fix the problem that is unique to Scott County. And it is particularly important in the fact that House File 2044, which you're going to hear later this morning, is asking a consideration to consolidate all of these probation funding streams into one. Thank you.
All right. Members, any questions? This is a one-time deal, right? You won't be coming back for more?
That is correct. Sure.
All right. Sounds like a great bill. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and be sure it's one time now, but part of the base, so it'll be ongoing, correct?
That is.
Okay. So in 2006, when the transition took place, was just no thought of asking for, you know, to keep the funding that was currently in place and add it to the new community corrections portion, or was it just something that, you know, we see other county making the transition, they're like, well, we can't make this work unless we get, you know, we're able to keep that existing funding. So I'm curious, were you around back in 2006?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I was not at the time. I was a deputy director in Dakota County Community Corrections at the time. And so I don't know exactly what transpired, but it's my understanding that the Department of Corrections kept all of the felony dollars that were appropriated during that particular legislative session, which I think was in 95. And then the caseload workload dollars had been split out. And again, we don't feel that enough of those dollars came to Scott County. And I don't think it was very clear to the county, Scott County officials at the time.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cleveland. So You talk about the workloads and all those types of things, but yet I have nothing here from you to show me what's happening in Scott County relative to other counties. If you could just sort of give me a rundown from a state average or an adjacent county, what the workload might be,
sure.
and why you need to receive this additional funding.
Mr. Chair, Representative. In Scott County, our probation officers, our adult probation officers, are averaging between 75 and 85 offenders. We have one probation officer that has over 100 offenders that she's supervising. In our probation reporting center, which is our lower to medium risk offenders, we have 1,800 offenders that are being monitored by three staff. I certainly think that our workload is more than we can handle, and the additional dollars would help. I would hope we could get one additional probation officer to help with the high-risk offenders.
Okay, Representative Ward.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, was this the one that Josh Milo was talking to us about, Community Corrections Director from Blue Earth County?
Josh from Blue Earth County, yes, he mentioned this.
Oh, okay, and my recollection was that was part of the problem, was that there was money was coming from several different pots, and this one just kind of got overlooked, one of the pots. Is that what your recollection was?
There's several different versions, but that's it. We just want to fix it, and once for all, and then Representative Lomer's bill coming up later will take care of the problem from happening in the future, hopefully.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward.
Thank you. I did have a question. Are you reading my mind? just wasn't ready for you to call on me. And perhaps I missed something in this. I appreciate the dollars, but I don't understand the correlation with the numbers that you're dealing with. So if, for instance, there was another column that talked about how many offenders each of these counties was dealing with, I guess I'd feel like I had some basis of comparison, because the dollars don't necessarily reflect the caseload per person and the level of offenses and things like that. I know that community corrections and corrections in general needs more money across the state for everything, but I just am having a little trouble understanding what this means. Thank you.
Go ahead and introduce yourself. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Erdman. I'm the executive director for MACAC, the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act Counties, of which Scott County is a member, and all of the counties listed on the funding comparison. And the CCA formula that is used to divide the primary subsidy and was initially used to divide the other pots has six factors. Some of them are weighted, so that you can't just take a straight per capita or even a per offender number and compare them. Some of the comparison we've done and that we've determined, particularly with Scott County and others, and looked at sort of the total column, what percentage of that comes from the CCA subsidy and what percentage comes from the other funds. And for the other existing counties that existed prior to 95, it's a pretty consistent rate. Ratio. And that's part of how we were able to determine a shortfall for Scott County. Representative Zerwas had a bill for Sherburn County. We applied that same methodology and found that the current spending, his bill, Representative Zerwas's bill, didn't cost any money because that current spending in Sherburn County as they transitioned sort of matched the ratio. So we were able to kind of find some consistency across the state using that type of methodology, and that's about where that $85,000 shortfall came in terms of how that math works out for Scott County.
Representative Ward.
Just one follow-up thing. So Rock Nobles doesn't have any sex offender program at all, and whereas Scott has adult felonies but no money.
Mr. Chair, yes, and that was Rock Nobles elected not to receive that grant voluntarily. They were an existing county at the time. Because their population is so small, the two counties combined are 30,000 people. They have like 8 staff total in their entire corrections department. So for a variety of reasons, they elected due to scale to not receive that grant. But like I said, that was they looked at the numbers and said, you know what, we're not going to do that. So,
all right. Any other questions? Any comments from the public? Seeing none, any closing statement, Mr. Representative Albert?
Chair and members, I appreciate the commentary and the questions. This is just going to bring Scott County forward to align with the rest of the counties, and we appreciate your consideration of the bill.
Okay, thank you. The bill will be held over for possible inclusion. Appreciate it. Representative Clark, House File 612. I'll move your bill to be held over for possible inclusion, and you can go ahead and begin. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm waiting for one of my witnesses to come. She'll be here shortly. I think she just stepped up. This is a bill that continues to provide support for very serious problem in our community. I believe you're receiving a handout that was a summary of some research done by Hennepin County Medical Center. And when Farhil Khalid, the executive director, comes down what you will learn is that we have previously funded the creation of the first shelter for women who are victims of domestic violence and trafficking in the state of Minnesota, and that was funded 2 years ago, and has been the amount of funding that was provided really got things off to a good start, but we need to come back to try to finish the development of the shelter. It's quite an incredible story to have this before us, Mr. Chairman. Talking about these sort of things in the community have been very difficult, and you know, it's one of those areas that's often been denied or just not supposed to be talked about. But I want to give great credit here to our the founder and the person who's worked so hard on this, Farhia Khalif, because she dared to bring up the issue of domestic violence in the Somali community and actually to propose a solution and carried it forward and has built an incredible community support for it. So I'm going to ask her to speak a little bit about that, and then a couple members from the community who will also talk about how this shelter, which is still the facility, physical facility, is still being readied. It's almost there, and hopefully we'll all be able to go to the opening. But they need some help to finish. They had some unexpected issues with water sprinkling and things like that that has delayed that a bit. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it over to probably the best spokesperson about all of these issues, Farhia Khalif.
Well, welcome, ma'am, if you state your name and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of committees. I am Farhia Khalif. I'm born and raised in Somalia, but I'm here as a first-generation immigrant in America, especially the state of Minnesota. I am a mother. I'm a single mother. I have two boys. But the need is urgent where you look, the Somali woman, usually we don't talk about when it comes to domestic abuse, because we from a world when man has four wives and as many children she can have, that's all she's worth for it. But we are a different world now. We're in America. We want to add, the reason I started this is we need to have a voice of our own as a woman. They need a shelter where they can go to, cultural appropriate, where they can talk to each other, where they can really, you don't have to talk, but we can understand because I am you. I know what you go through every day. Sometimes our community, the Somali woman, it's not easy for her to come forward and talk about her issues as a domestic abuse or sexual assault or rape or things that a man in her life will do to her. Usually she'll go to the mosque because that's where it's been sent to her to talk to the imam. Imam is the man. So what he usually does is the best for the family. He'll send her back to the house to make sure that she stays with her husband and the best for the children. But sometimes that's not what she wants, but she obeys the rules because that's what she knows. We trying to bring this woman together on a daily basis. What we do right now is up to 20, 30 mothers come together monthly. I call Silk Road of Mothers support group. We sit together. Sometimes I ask them not to talk, but just listen if you don't want to talk. But next time she might come forward and talk to me and tell me what's going on with her life. But when you go to shelter, there's amazing partners that we have, Harriet Tubman or Cornerstones. They've been around for years, but they don't, probably they will give them a place to sleep and shelter them for a few nights and have the food and go right back to where they come from. But what we want to do is to really, really, really empower this woman and to say you have a choices in life in here, you know. You don't want to go back to him. You don't have to go back to him. You want to go to school, be somebody for your children. That's what we're here for. We want to support you with that. So a lot of parents have a cultural shock where the youth are growing up. Mothers doesn't speak English because that's all she knows is staying home, cook, and clean. Because the children who born here last 25 years since we've been here, or they've been here since they're 5 years old, they now, 25, 30 years old, they don't have respect for the mother because she doesn't speak English. Sometimes children, youth, have cultural differences. When they come home, they feel like they're in another world. When they are outside, they feel like they're in another world. So they don't know where they belong to. So we also trying to help our youth. Youth, it doesn't mean only boys. Where we only reach out to the boys in the Arab Somali community, but also what about the youth for young girls? We want to do programs for young girls. We want to empower mothers. This shelter will help them if they run away from their husband or they someone who's abusing them. We will have them place for them to come together and reconnect and show them. They can go to school or whatever they want to do, we want to support that because we believe woman knows the best, what is best for her. I'm here to ask for your support. This is not just first time that we're coming in here, but the need is urgent. The woman needs protection for the man. I love Somali men. I love my religion. I love you can go to mosque. I love you can go all of that. But what about for her to come out of the mosque and get what she's supposed to get through other women who knows what she's going through. I have so much to say, but...
Mr. Chairman, we do have a few other witnesses from the community, if that would be okay.
Yeah, sure. You want to bring somebody else?
I have Musa. He's a community leader who also knows what I'm talking about. He will say a few words. Musa, ما كنت هل كان أنا كنت ترجمة. I will translate for him.
Okay. Welcome.
Okay. Good morning. I support in Farhia Khalif and community Eastie and
Somalia.
Waxaan taageersanahay Khalif and Farhia Khalif waxay wado oo ah in abuse kanaga la abuse. waxa weeye masaajidkana haddii anagana loogu keeno gabar wey gabdhu soomaalida way xishoodaan inta badan.
I thank you. My name is Musa. I'm here to support Farhia Khalif. I want to talk about when women is in trouble or she's abused, they come to us in the masjid, at the mosque.
waxa aniga waxaan gabdha waan dhalay waxay aniga ii sheegin bay hooyadoodu sheegaan aniga ii ma sheegi karaan way xishood waayo culturekeena waayo marka ii ma sheegayaan aniga laakiin hooyadoodu u sheegtaan
I have daughters myself. They don't talk to me. They always go to their mother and they talk to their mother issues that I don't understand.
waxa kaloo jiro marka hadii hadda gabadhii waxaan lagu sameeyo badana way qarsanaysaa laakiin gabar way u sheegi kartaa oo gabar way u sheegayaan wixii maaragtay oo baarkeeda.
So young girl, she might not come forward to talk to me, but she come to the mosque, she keep it to herself, but she will open up to another woman.
waa lagu tukada waa sida kan sidoo kale waa lagu tukada waana laga tago laakiin meel guri oo qofkii dhib qabo oo dumare ama ilmo wata ama baalka lagu hayo waa u baahan.
I support what Farhia is doing. I know the masjid is a peaceful place, it's a union place, a woman can always come and worship, but also we understand it's about time that we have a woman come forward where they can get support for other women where they can go to.
Okay, thank you.
Assalamu. Thank you very much.
Can you tell him thanks for appearing today in front of the committee?
Thank you.
Representative Constantine, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to point out that a lot of us who've had teenage daughters have had the same problem.
waxyaalaha lay sheega macnaha waxyaalaha lay sheega laakiin waxa lay sheega waa wax qoso dumarka ka dhexeeyo.
I appreciate that. I do get my daughter's concern, but I don't get all.
So hal midaa rabaa inaan ogaan u sheego waxa dhacday in gabdhaha waxaa ka dhamaaday bahalkan ay jirtaan oo gooniga markuu dhamaaday ayaa waxaan u soo gadi rabay. Aa gabar soomaaliya aniga fayska ma garanaynin marka gabar soomaaliyeed aan weydiiyey waxaan walaal ii sheeg waxa kan sayskooda ma yahay kwan kwan dhalay gabadha intii isaanigu tutornaga tagay dhaaday
marka
ka shaqaynayn gabar soomaaliyeed aan weydiiyey wayba baqday waxaanan raadinayaa qoolxumadooda camal.
I don't know if I shall say that.
Okay, he said when my daughter had her woman period, she was really urgent needed, and I went to the store, and this Somali lady was online, and I said, what sizes the young girls take this? And she just threw everything and walked out. So that's how much women not speak to a man to about things that they care about.
Did you have someone else?
Kali.
Don't dab it, yeah.
Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Callie Jama, and I'm a Somali woman. As a Somali, I am aware of the domestic issues going on. Like, in general, we do, we're familiar with the issues going on in domestic abuse. And for that reason, as Fahima mentioned, in terms of culture and religious reasons, it's difficult for women to seek help outside of the mosque. And like seeking cultural religions, sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, I apologize, I'm not good with public speaking, I'm just very nervous. So what we're trying to do is find a solution for women where they would be comfortable in terms of seeking help outside of the mosque and imams. Usually what happens is that they do seek assistance, and the imams, usually they do rule in favor of the men. And for that reason, once that issue happens, they just end up going back home. The situation is not resolved, and they just go back to square one. So what Fahir is working on with the organization that I'm currently volunteering a few hours a week is to give women a place where they can seek help and empower women and find them the solution that they need. And so this way they can seek the shelter, speak to other women, and open up and give them the assistance that they need. And it's within the community itself. So, I mean, we really do, we're looking for your support for the organization that we're working on right now, and we would like for you to support us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One more, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the executive director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. We're very proud to have Farhil as one of our board members. I'm also president and CEO of Integrated Community Solutions. As people of faith, we believe that we are to love and treat others the way that we'd want to be treated, and that everyone, without exception, has a decent, safe, and I'm talking about safe here, an accessible place to call home. I am a person that experienced domestic abuse. I was very pleased to have resources available in the community for me, a fourth generation immigrant to this country. And so I'm very hopeful that you will continue to support our newer immigrants to this country. We continue to become a much more diverse community as we are going through the next 20 years, and that we are going to need to have more culturally competent resources for the diverse community. Our Somalian friends and community members need a safe place that's culturally specific, and that where people can talk with them in their own language and within the custom. So I encourage you, and MICA supports this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a presentation, Mr. Chairman. If there's questions, I'd be glad to try to answer any.
Okay, members, any questions? Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, this seems to be primarily centered in the Twin Cities. We have a very large Somali population in Mankato, and I would see do you see it branching out, or maybe an outreach program that we could look forward to, say, in Mankato?
Maybe I'll let Ms. Cleef answer that question, then I have a comment too.
My hope is yes, to reach out to all Somali women around Minnesota.
The only thing, Mr. Chairman, I would add is that the grapevine in the community is very strong, as you may know. So the communications don't necessarily stop at a particular boundary. And I think once this resource is fully established, it will become well known. Just as the other culturally specific shelters, they become incredible havens for people throughout the whole state.
Mr. Chairman, I was at St. Cloud a couple of weeks ago talking to young women over there. I went to register, and they also asking me if I can show up over there and talk to them, and because it's needed. So, yes, we are. My hope is to reach out to all women and let them know they have a choice in life, and they can. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and
This would be the author. Does this preclude assistance to women of Islamic faith from Indonesia or Asian countries?
I want to speak on that. We welcome all women of Walk of Life. And we practice religion because that's our main religion is Islam. So they are, if they're seeking help and they are domestically abused, we are open-armed. We welcome them.
Okay, any questions from the public or comments? All right, seeing none, Representative Clark, any last statement before we hold it over?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill. And I really hope that Minnesota can go forward and complete the process that we've started with really incredible leadership for a very serious issue. And this last ask for finances will really set the set the final stage for opening the shelter and going forward. So I hope the committee can see to make it a priority, a priority in your budget, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll hold the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Johnson, House File 503, Child Advocacy Centers. Representative Johnson, you can move your own bill and begin.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 503 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Johnson. Anytime you want to go ahead with whoever you'd like to be first.
First of all, I want to thank you for hearing this bill. This is an important issue for me for the protection of our children. House File 503 deals with child advocacy centers. Right now we have, I believe it's seven throughout the state, and this bill is to try an attempt to get five more throughout the state. These advocacy centers deals with, started shortly after, in the late 1980s, after the 1984 issue in Scott County. I don't know if many of you remember that incident, but it changed the way law enforcement dealt with small children and victims of some serious crimes. In the packet that was handed out by my testifier, there's a map. It shows where these centers are. There's Beltrami County, Clay County, St. Louis County, Hennepin County, Ramsey County, Olmsted, and Winona. And a lot of counties dealing with these cases have got protocols where they use these facilities. Now, just take Mille Lacs County, for instance. If you have a child that's involved in a sexual assault issue, they use, Mille Lacs County uses the center down at Abbott. If the incident happened in northern Mille Lacs County, it's over a 100-mile drive that parent has to drive that child. And if these interviews are so important because they get everybody at the table together, the child protection, social, child psychologists to help if there's any psychological needs, law enforcement, prosecution. Gets everybody together so this child only has to do that interview and deal with and talk about the horrible incident that happened just one time. And that's the main thing, and that once gets to that point, they can get the help. That's why I feel it's so important, because we want, if there's an incident that happened, we want to make sure that the perpetrator goes to prison where he belongs, and he's away from other children to protect those kids. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Marcia Milken, who brought this bill forward to me, and I'm really appreciative of what she's done for me.
Hey, ma'am, go ahead and state your name again and begin. Thank you.
Okay. My name's Marcia Milliken, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Children's Alliance, which is a coalition of children's advocacy centers and multidisciplinary teams. And thank you, Chairman Cornish and committee members, for the opportunity to testify this morning. I'm testifying in support of House File 503, a bill that would provide funding for accredited children's advocacy centers to expand and augment services, funding for communities to develop children's advocacy centers where needed, and funding for statewide training, technical assistance, and capacity building through our coalition. In 2013, over 5,000 child abuse reports were made to Child Protection. Those were only Child Protection reports. That doesn't include the child abuse cases reported to law enforcement that were committed by someone other than family members. Research suggests that 1 in 10 children will be sexually abused before turning 18. When you look at each county, and you have a handout that talks about the prevalence of child sexual abuse, and realize the number of kids who could be victims of just sexual abuse alone, it's staggering. And that doesn't include physical abuse, sexual exploitation, neglect, or witness to a violent crime. And we see all those types of cases. How appropriate it is that we look at effective ways to address the issue of child abuse this month, which is Child Abuse Prevention Month. 30 years ago, prior to children's advocacy centers, children traveled from professional to professional, having one interview after another throughout the investigative process, and they also to receive services such as therapy or counseling. Realizing that children were re-traumatized every time they had to retell their abuse experience, and that having so many different interviews hurt the case, a district attorney in Huntsville, Alabama, developed the first Children's Advocacy Center in 1985, right around the same time as the Scott County case. Instead of a child having to undergo multiple interviews, the Child Advocacy Center model eliminated redundant interviews, and children started being interviewed by specially trained forensic interviewers who knew how to conduct neutral, fact-finding, non-leading interviews that were developmentally appropriate. This was a major breakthrough. Children's advocacy centers are grounded in a multidisciplinary team approach that incorporates not only forensic interviews, but specialized medical exams for collecting evidence and assuring kids their bodies are okay. Trauma-informed mental health services so children and families can begin the healing process. Family support services and advocacy to help connect families with the resources they need to make it through this life-altering time, and multidisciplinary team coordination that ensures cases are regularly reviewed by the team so kids don't fall through the cracks. Today, there are almost 800 children's advocacy centers in the United States and other countries. Minnesota has only 7. As you can see from the map that Representative Johnson referred to, we have large portions of the state that don't have local access to children's advocacy services. Many have to travel 2 or 3 hours to receive these services. House File 503 would provide the funding to ensure that an abused child would not have to travel so far to be seen at child advocacy centers. Kids could stay in their own community to get these services. The multidisciplinary team approach within child advocacy centers is effective and research-supported. Even the Governor's Task Force on Child Protection has identified the importance of a multidisciplinary team approach, encouraging this approach to be used from the moment of screening in a report of abuse and throughout the case. Although some aspects of a multidisciplinary team approach to child abuse can exist without a facility, a supportive child-focused facility is fundamental to a children's advocacy center. The location is designed to create a sense of safety and security for the victim. By funding children's advocacy centers, we are building the capacity to ensure all child abuse cases, all abused children, can benefit from the services they offer. We know that child abuse is a primary source of trauma in children's lives that can affect them their entire life, both as children and well into adulthood. It's important that we intervene as early as possible so they can begin the healing process to have happier childhoods, which lead to healthier adults. Children's advocacy centers exemplify the best aspects of our society's efforts to protect our most vulnerable citizens through collaboration, responsiveness, and innovation. We ask that you support House File 503.
Thank you for your testimony. Did you have any other testifiers?
Yes. Mr. Chair, yes, I do. I'd like to ask Sheriff Chris Culp from the Isani County Sheriff's Office. He's filling in for the Chief Deputy today, who's on her way back from Walt Disney World.
Okay. Welcome, sir. You state your name and title and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Kalk. I'm the sheriff of Isanti County. Living in outstate Minnesota, we have learned there are things that are a little different out there. We don't have the traffic, crime, or employment issues that the metropolitan areas face. We have accepted that an hour or more drive to find work is acceptable way of life. However, we also know that we need experienced medical care from time to time, and that we may have to even drive many hours to find that medical care. Sometimes we find that these individuals that need this medical care don't have a car or money to do that. Now add the fact that you've just learned your child is the victim of a sexual assault, and law enforcement tells you to take your child to drive to Minneapolis or St. Paul to have a sexual assault examination done at a child advocacy center. For people, this is a scary venture. Oftentimes they don't have a car or gas money or have any idea where they're going. This is what is done today. We are sending our children to Midwest Children's Resource Center or Corner House for sexual assault exams. It's critical that these exams are done within 72 hours of the assault. But due to the scheduling issues, our children are not able to get in within that time frame, and sometimes we lose evidence. It is also important to provide these exams to determine any medical issues the child may have suffered following an assault, and these also are not being done as well. This is like re-victimizing the victim again. The sexual assault was not their fault, and this exam is part of the healing process. We in outstate Minnesota are failing in this aspect. Isanti and Mille Lacs counties have formed a committee to try and bring the services of a child advocacy center to Princeton to better serve their communities and make the medical exam of a sexual assault accessible to the child that is the victim. This committee is comprised of law enforcement, county attorneys, and medical staff. They came up with the plan to provide this service, but money has become the issue. These exams require specialized doctors or nurses to provide the exams, and there are none in our area. By providing funding to outstate areas, law enforcement and child protection can work together with the Minnesota Children's Alliance to establish child advocacy centers throughout the state. Thank you for taking this time.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Mr. Chair, I have two more testifiers. Next, I'd like to call up Mark Ostrom, the Olmsted County Attorney, and he's also the President-elect for the Association of County Attorneys.
Welcome, sir. If you could begin with your name and organization and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Ostrom. I'm the Olmsted County Attorney, and as noted, I'm also a member of the Minnesota County Attorney's Board of Directors, and I speak on behalf of both my office and the County Attorney Association. On July 12, 2011, the Olmsted County Board approved a resolution creating the Child Advocacy Center Multidisciplinary Team. The team was established pursuant to Minnesota Statute 626.558. This was the first step in the establishment of the Mayo Child and Family Advocacy Program, our local child advocacy center. Today, nearly all victims involving a report of child sexual abuse are interviewed at our CAC. All the interested agencies, those persons who would be providing services to the child and family, including social services, law enforcement, medical providers, my office, all come together for one interview for the victim in an effort to maximize the forensics interview and greatly reduce the further trauma a child may experience in that environment. Other team members are available to consult with the team, and of very significant importance, advocates are available to the non-offending family members to answer questions about the process and services for the family to heal. The Child Advocacy Center is more than just a team. Our MDT was formally established in 2011, but the center did not officially open for another 2 years. While the team is the heart and soul of the interview, the center itself provides a calming, non-threatening atmosphere for the victims. Already a very stressful and scary time, bringing a child to a police station or a hospital is additionally traumatic. Our CAC is a nondescript building on the outside and an inviting space on the inside. Children and families feel welcome and comfortable in our space. As I said, our MDT includes several agencies. When a report comes in, it is usually a non-emergent situation. A staff member calls the team and organizes an interview, usually the next day. A member from all the agencies is present for the pre-interview staffing and then consultation after the interview is complete. One interview is done, satisfying all agencies' interests, needs, including medical. In 2014, RCAC did 69 sexual abuse MDT interviews of child victims and an additional 5 physical abuse interviews. The formation of an MDT and the relationships is a process, and we agreed in the very beginning to limit our MDT interviews to sexual assaults and only very egregious physical harm, physical abuse cases. Our center also saw another 69 cases for other services, including a few courtesy interviews for other agencies. On the one hand, it may seem like 69 interviews for a county the size of Olmsted is low, but that represents 69 kids who reported a form of sexual assault. Many of those were substantiated. 69 kids suffered a traumatic event at the hands of someone they should have been able to trust. 69 kids were able to share that event in a comfortable environment that was non-judgmental and where additional services could be accessed for their benefit. 69 kids is too many. The CAC is also a great resource for advancing this practice. In 2013, for example, we brought Corner House training program to our CAC and trained a number of individuals locally rather than sending them as teams to Minneapolis. Similarly, our CAC engages in other training for agencies engaged in child protection. Some of that we simply would not be able to do without such a local resource. I'm blessed to work in a county that has where such a resource exists, but too many of my peers do not have the advantage for such a complete investigation and environment. For the past couple of years, I've been sharing the benefit of our CAC with my neighboring elected county attorneys and inviting them to utilize our center. After all, we have a short amount of time between the report and the interview to gather the team and conduct the interview. For those counties immediately surrounding Olmsted, it's a short drive to Rochester. As I said, in 2014, we did a few courtesy interviews. In the first quarter of 2015, we have done 27 MDT interviews for Olmsted cases and 9 for other counties. The word is spreading, and those counties geographically nearby are starting to experience the benefits of the Child Advocacy Center environment. As I said, I'm lucky that we have a CAC in Olmsted County, but we are an anomaly. Most areas of Minnesota do not have the benefits available from a CAC. Most children who have been victimized outside the metro won't be able to share their story in a comfortable setting with a team genuinely focused on just their story. For those kids, the healing process and service delivery will be awkward at best, in some cases traumatic. Sharing that story is difficult, worse in a sterile government environment. Children, investigative teams, and service providers in the rest of Minnesota deserve the same opportunity as Olmsted and the metro counties. This bill will provide the seed money to create similar centers around the state. Geographically placed, several counties can benefit from an individual center by bringing their teams to a child-friendly environment. We've just heard that Isanti County is looking for one. I also understand that Stearns County and Blue Earth County are two prime locations. Finally, I would be remiss not to give significant credit to Marcia Milliken and the Minnesota Children's Alliance for the help she provided to Olmsted County as we developed our center. Marcia was a tremendous resource as we developed protocols and directed us to other training resources. Marcia was instrumental in our center gaining national accreditation. Marcia and the Alliance certainly understand that a CAC provides the best opportunity for kids to share their hurt and to find healing at the same time. The Minnesota Children's Alliance is the right entity to lead this transformation. I urge you to consider the benefits of children in Minnesota will receive with access to child advocacy centers strategically placed for their benefit. As I've said to our MDT many times, this is about the kids, not about us or our titles. The modest fiscal note this carries will benefit children for ages. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, I just have one more testifier, and that'll be Kelly Nelson, who actually had the unfortunate circumstance of having to use one of these advocate centers.
Okay, ma'am, welcome. You can go ahead and state your name and begin.
My name is Kelly Nelson. Good morning. I'm here to speak on behalf of First Witness, a children's advocacy center in Duluth, Minnesota. The mission of First Witness is to strengthen our community's response to child abuse. With a multidisciplinary team, they work together to investigate child abuse and coordinate needed services. First Witness provides forensically sound interviews with a safe and comfortable space for victims to talk about the abuse in one video recorded interview by a trained professional, while also providing in-depth advocacy and counseling for children and families. I know you're all here today to decide where the funds of this state are to be allocated, and I am here to tell you that children's advocacy centers like First Witness are worthy organizations to entrust your resources. Your funding will help educate our communities in the prevention of child abuse and will support the children and families of Minnesota who are facing child abuse. I know firsthand the lifeline that First Witness can be as a beneficiary of their services. I am now a single mom of four children, ages 9 and under. When our silence was finally broken of the life we endured at the hands of their father, First Witness was there. First Witness gave my children a safe place to talk about the scary secrets they held inside. As the mother facing her own wounds, they were there for me as I had to face the discovery of even more pain that my kids had lived through. Breaking free from the darkness of domestic abuse and sexual abuse is a scary journey. Walking out of the doors of First Witness after my children's disclosure of sexual abuse could have been like walking off the edge of a cliff, but it wasn't. First Witness doesn't close the door behind you and wish you luck. No, they hold your hand. They help you find the resources you need to start the journey of healing. They advocate for you and help guide you through the confusing maze of the judicial system. First Witness has comforted me through the devastation. They have walked with me through courthouse halls. They have sat with me through hearings. They have stood with me when I have had to face our abuser. They have listened to me when I have needed to be heard. They have encouraged me when the system seems to fail. They have nurtured and educated my children on their right to be safe and have helped them find their voice. My journey for complete safety from my children's abuser has been a long one. I am still trying to complete a divorce and prevent him from having any further contact. I know that I can go to First Witness any time to seek counsel or understanding. Had I not had First Witness as a resource, I would have lost one of the core support systems that have helped me to continue to keep my family safe. As you consider funding the great work of children's advocacy centers like First Witness, think about the resources you would want available to one of your loved ones if they were victims of child abuse. If you would want them to be heard, supported, protected, given a voice, and advocated for, then you would want them to have a place like First Witness. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. Representative Johnson, anybody else?
All the testifiers I had.
Okay, Representative Quam has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did have a question for the Olmsted County Attorney, Mr. Ostrom. Since you are familiar with Olmsted and you're also supporting counties around there, to me, looking at the map, you would need to have something in southwest, probably south central, to handle population-wise equivalent to Olmsted, and then geographically, how wide of an area is this cooperative effort and trying to gauge how many other sites we might need? And southeastern Minnesota is probably a little more familiar to you and I, and so that's why I'm using it as an example.
Mr. Austin?
Thank you, Representative Quam. In Olmsted County, I've invited those counties that touch Olmsted to come in, and even some that might be a little bit farther away. If we can be within an hour or so of a center, I think that seems to fit the needs and what a center can provide. When I look at, for example, Blue Earth County and Mankato, they have a pretty good population base. They've got a lot of service providers available in Blue Earth County. And then the surrounding counties around Blue Earth could also be served very, very nicely. Similarly, Stearns County is a great population base. They've got great service providers, and they've got a lot of counties that touch them. I would suggest that we look at areas like that and try and strategically place them in those population bases, and we certainly can move out even further from those.
No, Representative Quam, follow up?
I was going to let Representative the author, Quam. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, just so you're aware of it, Redwood County is halfway through the process of setting this up, but the one thing they're lacking is funding. So that's designed to help the southwest corner of the state.
Question on, you said Redwood.
Redwood Falls?
Yes.
Okay. What what's it cost to set one up, and how much are they short? Just a round ballpark figure.
Mr. Chair, it costs approximately $200,000 to set up just for startup for Children's Advocacy Center. They have part of the services established. They have, for example, the forensic interview room, the observation room, a waiting area. They need to still establish the medical services, the trauma-informed mental health. They do have advocacy services. I know they've run into some difficulties with soundproofing. They need to re-soundproof. They didn't do enough when they initially built their rooms. So, you know, I'm just looking here at some of the estimates, and I would say they are about $100,000 short, just ballpark guessing.
Right. Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was along the lines I was getting to, looking at the structure of the bill with the existing being able to get up to the 120K and 150K per year being designated out, and some of the existing already having OJC. You're basically looking at, with the partial cost with Redwood, two other sites, because two-thirds of the money is sort of, you know, earmarked or up to for the existing. And frankly, with some of those getting OJC, just the committee, as we look in the long run, it might be better to invest outside and maybe decrease that up to 120 in order to allow for, you know, more than three in the rest of the state to come out of this funding. Just a thought in sizing.
Oh, go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, currently there are five of the seven accredited children's advocacy centers that are located in Minnesota that would be eligible for the up to $120,000. And so when you include that plus $150,000, I believe it's $750,000. So half of that would be left for establishing new children's advocacy centers. And it would be difficult capacity-wise if all of the possible new children's advocacy centers were done in 1 year. So this would be over a couple-year process. And in our estimation, we have not done community involvement. My math may be off. But in our estimation, we haven't done community assessments, but in looking where the cases are located, we believe that five to seven children's advocacy centers would probably, regional centers would meet the needs of the state. Additional.
Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in reading line 3.11 through 3.12, I don't see accredited. I see an existing center may apply for a grant, and then you've got not to exceed 120. And that's where I came up utilizing the seven, because they were listed in the Minnesota Children's Alliances as existing centers. And, you know, yeah, if it's supposed to just be certified, then it'd have to be, you know, in the bill. But, you know, again, the main intent is, you know, we've got open needs, and since some of the existing ones are getting OJP, I would hope that we would look at filling where there isn't a viable option before adding and augmenting to existing. And that's my input.
A quick answer. We've got a session at noon and another bill to do.
And just for clarification, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, only three of the current children's advocacy centers receive any OJP funding. None of the others receive any funding at the moment.
Okay, Representative Ward.
Thank you. Very quickly, I'm just wondering if there are other sources of income. I'm assuming that the public safety people are paid through their own program, as part of their regular salary to be doing this, though you mentioned additional training that would be needed for the team. But I'm wondering if the counties participate at all, if medical insurance covers any of the counseling or any of the other kinds of resources. And then would the spaces be used for anything else? Another piece I've thought of is that once the information gets out about these, then I think there are probably going to be some more dark secrets coming out, that more people will be using them, and I'm very grateful for that.
Okay. Representative Dean, what's that? Oh, follow-up. Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, yes, they do have additional funding. The funding that they currently receive from Office of Justice does not fund their entire operation. They do receive funding. Some receive funding from counties. Some receive funding from cities. Some have partnerships with hospitals. Some are located within hospitals. All of them, to some degree or another, have to do fundraising. Some of them have to do as much as 40% of their budget is based on public donations. And yes, there are other services that can be located. For example, in Winona, they have family visiting services that are located there as well. So, yes.
I could also share my experience.
Real shortly.
I'll try to be very quick. I live in the medical mecca of the world. Everybody knows that. And Mayo Clinic has been very, very supportive of this. To the extent the medical exams can be turned into private insurance or other forms of insurance, they do that and they get some reimbursement there. As to using the center for other types of cases, we have done, I think, one or two vulnerable adult cases. But we were very, very deliberate about making sure that we are careful about that we do what we know, and we don't try to expand this too quickly. We know that there's other types of cases that the center could be utilized for, but you really don't want to run into things like that. You want to be very purposeful about what you do in this center.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm guessing this question probably should go to Ms. Milliken. So when we think about the regional centers that there might be, I mean, have they been identified? Is there already ongoing dialogues? Is there already some development of establishment? I, you know, when I look at the map of Minnesota, I see a large area that's not being covered. And if we don't have those, you know, areas identified now, what's the process you would go through to actually find an area that probably one of the advocacy centers might be established?
Milliken?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, they have not been officially identified yet. As we said earlier, there is interest in Blue Earth County, there's interest in Stearns County and Ashanti County. It will be a granting process. They will apply for funding from OJP. And, you know, I'm not sure everything that will be included in that. One key element that the Alliance will work with communities in is doing a community assessment to make sure that there's a need, to see what counties that they will be working with to make it a regional center, and to ensure that there's sustainability so that they don't just, you know, open a children's advocacy center without the ability to keep it open, without the community support. So I think all of that will play into how they are identified.
Okay, members, any more questions? Any comments or testimony from the public? Go ahead and state your name and begin.
Thank you, Committee Chair and committee members. My name is Christina Zizey, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Social Service Association. And we have approximately 3,000 members who are all health and human service professionals across the state of Minnesota. And just wanted to mention to you that this is one of our top priorities for this session, so we're really hoping that you will support it.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Representative Johnston, any closing comment?
You know, Mr. Chair, one thing I just wanted to stress. When Sheriff Kalk was up here, he talked about the 72 hours. That's in order to get the evidence that's needed in some of these cases, for possible prosecution. At this time, there's sometimes delays of 7 to 10 days before these interviews can be taken. And at that, at 7 to 10 days, a lot of the evidence is gone. That's because some of these facilities are overwhelmed with the amount of cases that they have. And that's one of the reasons that we need to get more regional areas set up so we can get the proper. So if somebody is doing something improper to a child, they can be dealt with. So I'd like to renew my motion to have this bill considered for, laid over and considered for inclusion.
Okay, thank you, Representative Johnson. Okay. Representative Lohmer, House File 2044.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to move my bill? I'd like to move House File 2044 to be included for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Lohmer. Go ahead and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Oh, you have an amendment?
Oh, I do. I do have a short amendment.
Amendment A1.
Right. It's just a technical amendment, I believe, that actually changes the date. This is something that the department caught, so we needed to make it current for 2015 instead of 1995.
Okay, members, you have the amendment. Well, Representative Lohmer removes her A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 2044 was brought forward by the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act counties and streamlines the funding sources provided to counties for providing correctional services. Currently, the counties operating under the Community Corrections Act receive the state funds from a variety of grants. The primary grant is the CCA subsidy. Other grants include caseload, workload reduction, felony caseload reduction, and sex offender supervision grants. Under the proposal, those grants would no longer be separately accounted for, but rather would be added to the current base funding that exists in the CCA subsidy. So this concept was proposed by the DOC and makes sense to the counties. It's being introduced in statute rather than being done administratively by the DOC because of the proscriptive nature of the CCA subsidy. The subsidy formula, including the provisions for a base funding amount, is in statute, and modifications need to be accounted for there. The other grants have not been increased or reduced in many years and have not been run through an updated formula, so adding them to the CCA subsidy base will not change any counties' allocations, but will simplify how state funds flow to counties and reduce paperwork processes for counties in the DOC. Additionally, for counties that may choose to transition to CCA, having the formula statute reflect and recognize these funds is essential to ensure that the counties are treated fairly in the process. Because this is a change in how current funds are accounted for, there is no cost to the state in making the change. So here to talk a little bit more about the proposal and take questions is MACCAC's President and Anoka County Corrections Director, Dylan Warkinen.
Hey, sir, if you could state your name and organization again and then begin, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dylan Warkinen. I'm the current director of Anoka County Community Corrections and the current president of the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act Counties, MACAC, as we call it. And I'd like to thank you very much for hearing this bill. I'd like to thank Representative Lohmer for bringing it forward. Basically, as has been stated, this bill is brought forward by our association to basically streamline funds. This is not a funding reform. This is basically taking monies that are currently coming in and streamlining how they're accounted for internally and how we receive them. Currently, the counties operating under the CCA Act receive state funds from a variety of different grants, as has been stated. There's a base fund of subsidy that comes in, and then there's these basic pockets, and every 2 years we go forward with a separate process of applying for those funds through their pass-through money through the Department of Corrections. And this basically streamlines that process to make them all part of the base. These funds that were created in session law and the Department of Corrections long ago really stopped tracking them independently because of the time that's passed. So essentially, each Community Corrections Act county creates a comprehensive plan each year. We submit that to the Department of Corrections. They review it. It includes accountability for our current subsidy. This would basically be a reporting process that would be similar for all these funds as opposed to just some of them. This proposal is really about simplification and streamlining. It is, I think, a win-win-win, a win for the state, a win for the counties, and also a win for future folks who would like to come into CCA to help to have a better estimation process of all the funds that would come to them, and so thereby preventing some of what we just heard from Scott County as well. So this is really about simplification and transparency of how those funds work. In some years, I'm going to retire. I won't be the president of MACAC anymore. I won't be the director of Anoka County Corrections. I'm certain that the Department of Corrections will have some turnover in their areas as well. I've seen that in my career. And this really also brings forth future streamlining, future accountability and transparency, so that future generations of leadership understand how this process works a little bit better. And so with that, I know you're tight on time. I'll pause for questions.
Okay, members, questions? You did a good job. This will take a little bite of the apple. We've ran around the probation funding problem now for just about ever since I've been here. Hopefully we'll be able to tackle the bigger problem eventually too. Was there any opposition, Mr. Erdman? All right, that's good to hear. Representative Lohmer, any comments from the public? And you want to close with a statement, Representative Lohmer?
Just say thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this great bill, and hope we can have it included in your bill.
Okay, we'll lay it over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we'll try to stick close to our plan. I'll be talking probably to you today or this afternoon and something in more detail and around the House floor, and we'll figure something out for next week. And so. All right, members, with that, we're going to move up to what room? GOP, sorry? 400 South, meeting adjourned.